In March of 2011, following flood damage to the home of the late Rudolf and Hannelore Schulhoff, Michael Schulhoff, the son of Mr. and Mrs. Schulhoff, hired Joselita Vega, a house painter. The art treasures they amassed became known as the Schulhoff Collection and enjoyed global renown and historical significance. An inventory of the art collection was conducted in late March of 2012, and it was discovered that three works were missing, a Frank Stella, a Norman Lewis, and a Jean Dubuffet. In an effort to recover the Stella and the Lewis artwork, we decided to set up a sting. Vega was hired to paint another part of the estate this past April 29th. And working with the Kings Point Police Department, we installed hidden video surveillance cameras in an area where the defendant was scheduled to paint. Works of art were openly displayed. Shortly after Vega arrived, the cameras captured him stealing three works and placing them in his SUV.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I am Hollywood Wade, and we hope everyone enjoyed last week's episode with Brian O'Day and Tim McBride. We called it Smuggler Stories. Hopefully we can get those two back together again, probably do some cross branding with Ignacio Esteban as well. He's got an episode coming out next week. Really going to be a great one. You guys don't want to miss that one. But today, we have got a doozy for you. We've got Picasso Vega, who just had a documentary come out detailing the scenario that we're going to go over here today in this interview, the Picasso of Thieves, and how he got that nickname. If you heard that opener there, he was actually a house painter hired to do some work in a real uppity part of town in Long Island and was actually stealing high-end pieces of artwork. Some of them were Picasso's towards the end that got stolen. And just the series of events that followed this whole thing was just crazy. And Picasso wasn't the only one that was doing this. There was some other people. He just happened to be one that got caught. But, you know, that's usually how it happens. You know, other people are doing it. They don't get away with it. You decide to do it, you get caught. But be that as it may, he's managed to flip this around and spin something positive out of something negative. And he's got this documentary out, and it's just a heck of a story. So I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So let's get right into it here with the Picasso of Thieves, Picasso Vega, here on Crime and Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I have here today a very special guest with a hell of a story. Please welcome to the show Picasso, and you'll find out why he goes by that name during the course of this interview. Picasso, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show, man. I was driving 100 miles an hour to get up to your show today, brother. I had to be here, and especially on time. It was killing me.
Well, you made it. I'm glad we didn't get in any wrecks and getting pulled over by any John Q. Laws on the way up here. You've had enough run-ins with them here lately, so you want to keep your nose clean.
That would have been bad.
Bad for business. So you've got a very interesting story, man, and we're going to get into it here. But first, let's start with some of the more general questions since it's your first time on the show. Tell us a little bit about you and where you grew up, what early life was like, and then we'll get into the reason why we're here.
I was born and raised in Brooklyn I was born on 57th Street and between 3rd and 4th Avenue. And I spent 16 years of my life in that neighborhood, you know, and life for us was very rough. My mother was a one income family. Our father was not around. At a very early point in my childhood, I had a very traumatic incident that changed the way I see life itself. So that's really what molded me. That's really what made me who I was. I grew up on the streets. I'm a street guy.
Right. Okay. So what part of Brooklyn, if you don't mind me asking?
Sunset Park.
Sunset Park. Okay.
Sunset Park, born and raised.
All right. All right. I've been up there a few times. And one of the last times we was at a studio somewhere near Red Hook, I think it was over there.
Some of my best clients are in Red Hook.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you start this whole thing starts by your, was you a painter by trade? Was that your regular job? Was that something that you had, you know, been into for a while, or how did that come about?
I've been a painter since I was 14. I've always been, I started working very early at the age of 10. I started working to help my mother out, you know, cause, she couldn't do it on her own. And I had, two older sisters, a younger brother. So I hustled for them, mm-hmm. you know, but, the painting thing, I started at the age of 14 for the summer jobs to bring in a little check. And from that point on, I was a painter for my entire life.
And then were you painting what, like, you know, houses or buildings or what was that?
At the very beginning, I did apartments in Red Hook, in Bay Ridge and Park Slope, you know, a little cheap apartment. But then eventually I got a job on the Upper East Side working for this very extravagant painting company. And that was pretty much all she wrote. Once I got in that door, I stood with that forever.
Okay. And I mean, when I've traveled to New York, man, there was like a 10-year gap from the first time that I'd, or the last time that I went, as opposed to about a year ago, because I had a little trouble with the law myself for a while and couldn't leave the States. And when I went back, I couldn't recognize a damn thing. I mean, there's so much construction going on there. I can only imagine how busy constructions and painters and everybody else stays around there. I mean, the work around there must just be nonstop.
It pretty much is nonstop. Not only it comes from all aspects. There's commercial, there's residential, there's the actual tenants, you know, so especially New York, the money falls from the sky. It rains yeah. money over there.
Right. So this specific, how long did you paint before this situation happened that we're going to get into?
The situation that happened, the one where I got arrested.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, from the point I started to the point that I got arrested was probably 20 years.
20 years. So yeah. And to the point you got arrested, did this happen any point in time before that?
No.
No. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the client that hired you for this particular job and kind of what exactly has you here today, which by the way, I'm assuming that's the poster of the movie behind you there. You just got back from a screening. I don't want to give away too much too early, but this story that you're hearing here today, folks, and he hasn't done a lot of these interviews, is being turned into a movie. So you're going to want to get the inside scoop here. So kind of give us a little bit of insight on what you were doing at the time this job came about, who it was, and kind of walk us through this whole process.
After I had the traumatic incident in my childhood, I found a way to cope. I never had a need for money, so this was not a monetary gain. You know, you can't sell artwork. Artwork is one of those things that there's no black market for, really.
Right.
I can tell you as a professional, there's no black market for artwork. You ain't even Googling black market. You ain't finding the number. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's like that big art heist they had in Boston years ago where all those paintings got stolen. None of them have ever been recovered. So they're either hanging in somebody's basement or they got destroyed. You know, no, you can't sell that shit.
Nobody would destroy them. But yeah, they're somewhere. Nobody would ever destroy them. Yeah, that'd be crazy to destroy artwork. That was sacrilege.
Yeah.
But, what I was going to say is my thing, it manifested, you know, it was like my way to cope. It was, you know, when you go into some of these Park Avenue apartments and some of these ultra rich 1% apartments where the apartment is 150 million, 200 million, you know, a quarter of a million, just in furnishings, you know, it's just amazing the amount of money that's here. You know, sometimes we used to stack the Picassos in the closet, you know, it's like, and I'm talking about stack them, not, you know, there wasn't one. And if it was one was missing, you'd miss it. You know, we're talking about 200 or 300 pieces.
Jeez.
You know, my mouth would water.
So were you into that level of painting, like the Picassos and all the other, the high end arts? You were that far deep into the paintings as well at this time?
No, we only did, the painting company only did like fancy finishes, full finishes.
Yeah, but just your knowledge of the subject of these paintings.
Always. But it was an under, I had been learning it without knowing about it, you know, since I was in junior high school, reading the Wall Street Journal, New York Times on the way to school. You know, teachers used to tell me, read the smart papers. So I would read it. So it was building in my head. I didn't know it was building. It was there. And I knew every piece, you know, it was so crazy because when I first walked in that apartment, I believe it was on Central Park West. And I first walked in and I couldn't even form words. And the thing is, dude, with the ultra wealthies, a lot of times they look so far past you that you're invisible to them. They don't even see you.
Yeah.
Like you're not there.
Wow. So who was the people that hired you for this particular job in question? Because they were pretty prominent family. This was what, in Long Island?
Well, that family, we were actually hired through a decorator.
Okay.
So the decorator hired us, and we went to work for this family. And then we had a reputation with them. So we built the reputation over the years. Did the houses in the Hamptons, in Manhattan, up in Carmel, New York, up in West Palm Beach. You know, we did it all for them. We did it all for the 1%. The entire, every paint job we did was for a 1%, the top of the upper crust, you know?
Right. Now, when you go in this particular house, did you have a personal relationship with these people? You knew who they were?
I didn't know who they were. They were just clients.
Clients. Okay. And I mean, did you just, when you come in, you spotted some of these pieces of artwork right off the rip?
Yes, absolutely. Right off the jump. The thing is with me is even, all right, let's put it this way. We have, anytime I walk into a room, right? Most people walk into a room and they're oblivious to every single thing that's around them. Like they don't have any clue. I walk into a room and I can tell you how much money they have in their bank account.
Yeah.
If they have a girlfriend, I can tell you everything. If they own their house. You know, this is something that comes like instinct. I can't control it. It's automatic.
Right. So you walk in, I mean, how many pieces are there throughout this home? What's that? What size square footage was this home?
I'd say that this square home was probably 6,500 square feet. It was a massive home. It was gigantic. It was a museum.
Yeah. And this is in Long Island, it was?
Yeah, it was in Kings Point.
Kings Point. Okay.
Which is the most secure neighborhood pretty much in the world.
Yeah.
There's cameras on every street corner, on every light.
Where is that in relation to, isn't there a Tote Hill up there?
No, now you're talking Staten Island.
Oh, that's Staten Island. Okay. I'm getting confused. All right. Okay. So you're seeing all these paintings. You guys are hired to what? Just paint, I'm assuming, just the walls and throughout the house or certain rooms? What is your specific job in this house?
Our job was to touch up any paint that needed to get touched up, do some touch-ups, you know, just general banister touch-ups and stuff like that. Maybe a couple of ceilings, you know, nothing major.
Okay.
And nothing fancy.
Okay. So, I mean, probably not going to be in there very long then, I guess, all things considered.
I believe it was a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess
everything for the wealthy takes four times as much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I can believe that for sure. So what prompted you to take this artwork and walk us through what prompted you to do it and how you did it?
It was, it's an overwhelming feeling. You know, it's like when you first see an original, piece of artwork. But first of all, you got to know how to see an original.
Right.
When you first see an original piece of artwork, it's something, if you can appreciate it, you can tell what the artist went through to get to what he put on that piece of artwork. It's amazing. It's like, if you ever go to a museum and but you got to absorb the artwork and you got to really feel it. You got to understand the language. It's the whole language. You just don't go in and look and say next. It doesn't work that way. Artists die for their work,
Right. But there's a story in the painting. There's a struggle in the painting. Every painting kind of like, I kind of equate it. I've heard people say, like, if you ever watch pro wrestling, the wrestlers tell a story throughout that match. The paintings tell a story of that artist, through maybe whatever he was going through at that time of his life or, just his life in general. Maybe it was someone else's story, but there is a message in the painting. Like you said, it's not just something you look at. Oh, that's nice. And then go on. So I get what you're saying.
I mean, literally, if you look at it on any given day and you want to, and if you want to absorb what the artist was doing, you could tell how he was feeling. You could tell what he was thinking. Sometimes they put hidden images in the artwork so you can find them. It's things that I love, man. It's just like, it's like a human being on a piece of, art. It's amazing. When I saw the one I wanted, I had to take it. I didn't have a choice. I was compelled. Like, literally, I could sit there and I could say to myself, don't do it. I could do it 100 times and I'm still going to say, fuck it, do it. I fight the demon inside myself. I fight it every time. It's like I try to stop myself. I'll give you a perfect example. I stopped myself the other day. I went to a museum and I saw a Rembrandt. I love museums. I saw this Rembrandt. Dude, I'm standing in front of the Rembrandt and I'm shaking. So the guard comes over and he said, are you okay? I said, I need you to know that I'm a art thief. But that was the only way I could break that cycle. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, dude, I could have replaced it if I wanted to. I just could have.
So when you say replaced, what are you doing here to get away with this? Are you making fake ones and replacing them? Well, how are you doing this?
I'm just replacing, I'm taking the old one out, putting a new one in, and making sure that the new one matches the old one.
Now, how are you getting the old one? Or the new one, excuse me. How are you doing that?
Kinko's. Well, I don't know if Kinko's exists anymore, because that was so long ago. But I think Kinko's might not be there. It's FedEx, I think, now.
So you're getting, what are you, just ordering a copy?
No, Kinko's does it right on the spot.
Oh, they do. Okay. So, but I mean, you got to get them beforehand, right? You're just going in and swapping them in the house?
Yeah, but usually Kinko's is, back in the day, Kinko's was on every corner on the Upper East Side, on the West Side. They were everywhere.
Right.
You can go into Kinko's, and I would go in there, and depending on how thick the stock was on the painting, I'd match it up with their stock. So that way I had the same thickness, and then I do a high digital quality copy. And if I had to embellish it, then I had to take it home. But if I didn't have to embellish it and it was good to go, I had some tools with me that I made it look perfect and put it right back. These people aren't buying art for an investment. That's not what they're buying. Are you see that poster behind you?
Yeah.
You bought it because you love it. That's it. Yeah. That's why they bought it. They didn't buy it because, I'm going to make $1 million off of it. It wasn't worth $1 million when they bought it. It was worth like $500.
Right.
So
whenever you have these copies, you bring the copy in with you, secured somehow, make your way to the original. What do you do? Cut it out or just swap frames? How are you doing it there?
No, usually the original's already with me. If I'm going to take something, the original's already out.
No. So you're bringing the one you're replacing it with. When you're bringing in the one you're replacing it with, how are you bringing that in? Just in a bag or something? Hidden?
Oh, the same way I took the other one out. Let's say if I took it out with a drop cloth or if I took it out under a ladder or something.
Right.
That's the same way I'll bring the other one back in. And you will never notice. Like, literally, I could be in the room with you putting the Robert De Niro on the wall and you won't know I'm even there because you're oblivious to it. And that's the way life just functions with some people.
Yeah.
Some of us see and some of us don't. Yeah.
No, I absolutely. I'm one of those people too. Like you said earlier, that when I walk in, I'm reading the room. I'm reading the people. I'm looking at the exits in case shit gets out of hand. Like, you know, and not that I live that type of lifestyle that I need to. It's just in general. Nowadays, the way people come in shooting and shit, mass shooting, you need to know where a fucking exit is. You know, you sit. I'm real particular about how I sit in restaurants. Like I kind of like to prefer to sit my back to the wall so I can see other people. I don't like my back to the door. And like, and that's not that I don't have anybody after me, at least not that I know of, but I've just always kind of been like that.
That makes two of us, brother. You know, it's just something. Were you brought up on the street?
No, not really. I mean, I hung around with a lot of people that come up on the street. I was very fortunate. I had a pretty good home life, but I always gravitated. My friends were people from the street, and it was just, you know, I learned a lot from those friends as opposed to, like, I didn't hang out with, I guess, what you would consider other kids that had a good home life like me. Most people were from broken homes. I mean, a few were, but most of them were from broken homes. A lot of my friends, you know, nowadays, as I'm almost 40 years old, I look back, a lot of them are in jail. A lot of them are dead. You know, a lot of them, you know, God knows where some of them are. There's only a handful that straightened it out along the way. But coming up, a lot of them were, you know, they were rough and they were rowdy, and I hung out with a lot of those guys.
You know, but that's the thing too, is, you know, we all make up some excuse why we're messed up.
Right.
But we don't make up it. We shouldn't have to make up excuses why we learned so much on the street, why we met such grubby people, why we met such rough people, people that didn't have it as good as us. You know, you got to absorb all that stuff and appreciate it, because that's what makes us who we are. Otherwise, we'd be these stuck up, conceited people walking around not understanding why people can't afford sneakers, you know.
Right.
I mean, if you can gravitate around that, because I've been from starving, I've been to billionaire status, you know, working for these people. I got treated like a billionaire. So I've been, you know, I've been up and down the realm. I'm comfortable. I don't need to be anywhere else.
Yeah, both ends of the spectrum. And no, I mean, yeah, I can sympathize with that, because I mean, obviously, like, coming up, everybody wants, like, shoes were a big thing when I was in middle school. And I remember my mama telling me, like, you know, I don't know if I'll be able to get those. And I remember my grandmother surprising me, coming to the house and surprising me. So she made sure I got the shoes. So I didn't have a lot of money, and I had, you know, some friends that did. And it was kind of, you got that vibe, like, you know, God, you had to get, you couldn't get those or something like that. And I just, those people never sat right with me, man. I always just gravitated towards the people that usually got in trouble for whatever reason. I mean, that was just, I could resonate with them more for whatever reason. Still to this day, I mean, this podcast, everybody that I talk to, I mean, you know, has done something in one way or another. And I don't know. I just have way better conversations with them. I get better vibes off them. That's just kind of how it's always been.
You know, and that's it. You know, that's the thing. I agree with you 100%. I feel like if you haven't experienced everything, you only see one view of things. So you can't connect, you know, on so many levels. You can only see, if I lived on Park Avenue my entire life, I only understand posh.
Right.
You know, I don't understand poor.
Yeah.
You know.
So you get this first painting. Did you only take one the first time?
Yeah.
And what was your plans with it? What would you want to do with it? You want to keep it? You want to try to sell it?
No, I was keeping that. I was keeping it. Yeah. Yeah. See, the thing is that, like I said, you know, there's no black market for it, but I didn't need the money. It wasn't about the money. It was about that rush. It was about feeling that someone's going to walk in that room at the moment you take it, or see you walking out, or whatever it may be. It's just that drug. Cause I don't smoke. I don't drink alcohol. I don't, you know, none of that stuff at the time. You know, now I smoke pot to calm my anxiety and the monster, but I didn't do drugs. So I needed something. That was my edge, bro. That was it.
No, that's completely understandable. So this went off without a hitch. Nobody was the wiser. Everything went smooth.
Absolutely. Like a caddy driving down the block.
And I know how good those drives. I drive a Cadillac. So
I love them.
That's very smooth. How long before the first one did you pull the second?
6 months later, because we were still at the first apartment for about 6 months.
Okay. What was the second one you took?
The second one was a much smaller painting. It was a tiny little painting, but it was amazing. It was just this amazing picture. It was just something that captivated me. It was just, I love dark. There's something about a dark painting that can draw me into a room faster than any other painting. Right. This painting was dark. Like, literally, there was a million paintings around it, and this painting drew me right to it, and that was the painting I had to take. I took it.
So fairly easy to get out.
I try to talk my way out of it. I do. I try to say to myself, one conscience says, don't do it. The other one says, fuck that. Take that shit.
I think that's called the angel and the devil there. I believe that's what
it literally is. It literally is.
Oh, all right. So what did you do with that one? Did you keep that one too?
Yeah, I kept. I until the very last one, that I got caught for.
Right.
I've never sold a painting. Never. You will never find anything linked to me saying that I sold the painting to anyone, period.
Right.
I just don't do that.
How many did you take before they started noticing something?
What do you mean, on the last job?
You went through a period of time at that one job, and then I guess in the midst of that, you were no longer there. They realized something, and then they hired you back. And then at that point, they installed hidden cameras, right?
Yes, they were looking for one painting.
Okay. So in the period of time from when you started to the first time you left, how many pieces did you take total?
From this one job?
Yes.
I believe it was four total, because three, it was the one, and then there was the three that was still in the trunk. But I had to confess to taking six, because that's the only way they were going to let me go.
Oh.
So the other two, I'm sure, are in the garbage somewhere, because insurance. Let me tell you something, you know, and this is just layman's thing. Paintings aren't worth jack. You insure them for as much as you can. If they're stolen or the house burns down, you win.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, you're going to get for a $50,000 painting, you're going to get exactly what I got, was $8,500. Wow. That was it. There's no, you know, this is all just bullshit, you know?
Yeah. So what painting were they hunting that led them to figure out that something wasn't right?
I believe it was the Debuffet painting. There was a Debuffet painting that was missing, I believe.
Okay.
And that was one that they were looking for. But the thing was, you see, this is the whole complicated factor. The day I got on that job, day one, I didn't even change my clothes yet. I already knew that that job had been robbed. The job had been robbed by several different people. Okay. Before I got there, I just knew it. I was speaking to my guys, and my guys told me, oh, someone did this and someone did that. And in my head, I was calculating. Yeah, they didn't do anything. They stole that shit. You know, and then the worst part is, this is a minuscule. This is nothing. This is one pea in the pod. After they started investigating me, they found out that there was $1 million they uncovered that he lost out of a sale of painting, and they found it. Have you ever lost $1 million around there? Is it on the shelf?
Yeah, I'm not losing that. I can guarantee. I'm keeping that shit somewhere.
$1 million. It's like, what?
But I guess to them, that's the equivalent of me losing like a $5 bill. You know, if I don't find it, it's not the end of the world. I guess that's what that is to them.
He didn't even know it was missing.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
That's now, crazy, right?
So you didn't replace every single one you took. Some of them you just outright took.
Only three I outright took. Yeah.
Okay. So at some point after you're no longer on that job, I guess they find out that it's missing. And did they just kind of have a suspicion that it might have been you?
No. They started fishing.
Okay.
They started bringing back anybody that was in the house, and they, you know, ran the same booby trap thing or whatever.
Okay. And so they didn't just bring back you. They might have brought in people that were there before you, after you, everything.
Yeah. Okay. And you could, if you look at the reality show, the reality show is called The Brooklyn DA.
Yep.
And I'm featured in episode number 1 and number 3. If you look at it and you hear them, they'll tell you on the audio, they'll say, if he doesn't take any paintings, we have him on nothing.
Yeah.
You'll hear it. So if I didn't take those, I would have been okay.
Yeah. So they reach out to all these people. The idea is here, and I guess you can tell me if I'm wrong. They have a feeling that the painters took it. So what they decide to do, and what, who did they go to? Just local police?
I'm sure it started from the district attorney in Brooklyn. Then they went to the Nassau County police. And I believe the FBI were also involved at the very beginning.
Right.
And then, they dumped the case on the two, Nassau County and Kings County.
Okay. So what they did here was apparently set up hidden cameras unbeknownst to anybody that they would have brought back to the house. And basically kind of, if you want to get technical, almost entrapped. I mean, they're laying out the cheese there for the mouse. I mean, hoping somebody bites, and then they'll figure they have their man. When they call you back, what do they do? Reach back out to the company you work for, say they need some more work done?
Yeah, well, actually, they do more than that. They reach out to them. They tell them, look, with the DA's office, we want to set up a thing.
Oh, so they told them all that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And that's just from the fact that I missed the red flag. You know, I smoked 2 fat blunts that day. You know what I'm saying? And it's like I tell everybody, there was red flags coming out my ass. You know what I'm saying? I heard from one little bird weeks before I got there that the DA was investigating, or that those cops investigating about something. I should have bailed then.
Yeah.
Then I got there and the bosses were acting a little suspicious. I should have bailed then. I didn't. I was high. I was like, that was good weed. Woo!
Oh, shit. Okay. So you go up there and you spot another one, and it's like, you got to get it. You got to have it.
Yeah, we're going into retirement now, though. We're
right.
Going into, you know, these are my last years. My body's jacked. So I'm going in there, and this is going to be my go bag. This is going to be my go watch, you know? Yeah. You get that for the MTA?
Your retirement.
Yeah, my present, you know?
So how do you try to get this? Which one is it? Which one is it to start with?
The Picasso.
That's the, okay. All right. So this is the Picasso. This is like,
I leave a Picasso behind. Are you crazy? And then, you know, they put in a fucking box. That's no respect. So that you use the Picasso and I'll make the plaster on it. Come on.
So they had it in a box.
Yep.
What's the retail value? What I don't say retail value. What's the value of this painting?
Their value, the insured value.
Yeah,
I believe the insured value was $50,000.
$50,000.
But the real value was probably $3,500. Yeah, we can make believe $50,000, but it was really $3,500.
Wow, that's some serious fucking markup there with those paintings. Yeah. It's like jewelry.
It's only up to who's in the room and wants to buy it at the time.
Right.
If
yeah.
That person there, you're going to get that guy that says, I'll take it for $100.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, overlook that fact when they say, oh, it's worth this, it's worth that. I'm like, look, it ain't worth shit if somebody's not going to pay you for it. Like, I mean, you know, you might have something that may have that much value, but that don't mean you have that value. I mean, I collected baseball cards when I was young, and recently my mom cleaned out a spare bedroom that had a bunch of stuff in it, and she brought them to me, and I'm going through and looking at some of them. And I remember even back then, some of them was worth, you know, $400 and $500. And now they're up, we're still like $1,000, you know, nothing crazy that I'm gonna, you know, quit my job over, but some decent money. And my wife's like, wow, you can sell this and sell that. I'm like, look, just because it's worth that does not mean that's what people are going to give you. I was like, you got to have somebody that specifically says, hey, I want that, you know, Yogi Bear or Nolan Ryan or whatever. You know, you've got to have that person. If you don't have that person, you got nothing but a fucking baseball card. That's all you have.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you go in there.
Any kind of value. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So you go in there, you see this Picasso, you got to take it. How do you get it out of there?
I took the Picasso. I took the Debuffet. I put them in a garbage bag and I took them out to the Mercedes.
Oh, wow. So you took two.
I took three.
Oh, three. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I believe I came back for the third one because I believe one of them was pretty big. I believe the Picasso was the biggest one.
I forgot some tools here, folks. I'll be out of your way in a minute. Okay. So how long after that did the police come knocking?
I finished the end of the workday. I got in my car, drove maybe a quarter of a mile down the road, stopped at a stop sign, and a camera crew ran behind my car. I saw them in the rearview mirror. They had one of those big boom lights, and they ran across the car, and they said, huh, that's a little strange, you know? We're here in the fog, and a guy runs across the street, two guys, one holding a boom and one a camera. And then SWAT, instantly, as soon as I looked that way, SWAT was everywhere. They came out of everywhere. But I didn't know why they were stopping me. I had no fucking clue.
You didn't think that, damn, they might have been watching me? That it didn't click? You had no idea?
Who was watching me? There was nobody watching me. You know what I'm saying? It was that real. It was like, there was nobody. If you look at the video, you'll see that I had no idea what was going on. I couldn't comprehend.
Yeah. You were just, it was just like business as usual.
Yeah, it really was. It's like, what, you know, what are you going to say? What are those things in the back? Those are mine.
You know? What did they say when they came to the car?
I believe they read me my Miranda, and they thought, this is the whole concept, is they read me my Miranda, and they were hoping, I guess they were praying, that I would get on my knees and start crying like a bitch.
Yeah.
That's what they were praying for, because I could tell you, when they finally got me back to the station at Kings Point, it was literally like something at a Sons of Anarchy, where it was a huge conference table and all the DTs got their badges on their chest and they're all sitting there, you know, waiting for them to bring me in and crucify me. And I'm like, they showed me some pictures and I didn't recognize two of the paintings because those two paintings, I did not take them. I did not recognize them. So immediately I said, where's my lawyer? So all this drama that they set up with the big table and 35 detectives and all this bullshit, that was a waste of their fucking time. That was a waste of their fucking time. Because it made them look like assholes. I mean, let's just be honest. You got 35 fucking guys and you got a schmuck. I'm a fucking schmuck painter. And I tell you, where's my lawyer? So all that posing with your badge and all this looking hard and waiting for me to come crying, it never happened. It wasn't going to happen. Fuck that.
Did you have a lawyer on hand or on deck that you, I mean, if you had never really been in trouble, you probably didn't need one.
Well, I've always been in trouble, but I never needed a lawyer.
Who did you use? Did you have one in mind that you knew I'm assuming you didn't go into a public defender.
Actually, at the very beginning, I had a public defender. But after I told him to take his head and shove it up his ass, because I realized that he was trying to take down my testimony to give it to the DA without trying to help me whatsoever.
Yeah.
I pretty much told him, shove your head up your ass. I mean, and within minutes of me doing that, I walked down to the Rikers Island, and I was down in the holding cell or whatever. And I'm thinking, who's the baddest lawyer? Remember, I don't have any money. I'm broke. I don't have any money. So I said, who's the baddest mother, you know, motherfucker that I could find, lawyer, that will take the case and defend me? Because I'm not looking for someone that I'm going to tell you that I'm a goody two shoes. But that's, I don't want that. I want a guy who fights for guys like that. I know who I am. And I got Bruce Cutler, John Gotti's old lawyer.
Oh, you got fucking Cutler?
Yes,
holy shit.
Bruce Cutler, bro. And you know what? After I got Cutler, that was it. I felt good. I was in Rikers. I was good.
Hell yeah. I think anybody would feel good after that.
You know, you got a guy like that watching your back. Come on. You really going to worry about things? That's the best of the best.
No, yeah, and for people that maybe don't know who Bruce Cutler is, I mean, like you said, he represented John Gotti in a number of his trials, you know, got him off on a ton of stuff. As a matter of fact, the only one that John Gotti did not get found innocent on was the one that Bruce Cutler was not allowed to be his lawyer. I think that's when he had to go with Albert Krieger.
Yeah, because he beat the feds.
Yeah,
Bruce Cutler beat the feds, and nobody does that, you know.
Yeah, a number of times he beat him. So what was out? What was I just said his fucking. Oh, what was Bruce's like? Because you didn't have any money, how was he saying he was going to handle that?
Well, the thing was with Bruce is I already knew one thing that I did have a lot of was notoriety. I was on the front cover of every newspaper that you can name from here to Taiwan. From the New York Times to the Wall Street Journal, New York Magazine, literally. If you Google my name, you'll find me in Taiwan in some Chinese Taiwanian newspaper, which I found so incredible. Because why? You know, it doesn't make sense. I'm not a serial killer,
right?
But let me tell you, after I got Bruce, I relaxed. I was able to, you know, do my own thing. You know, and deal with the situation at hand. You know, I was like letting somebody else drive.
Right. So what were you looking at charge wise and what were they talking time wise? I mean, I know they're always going to come with the biggest fucking number they can get.
6 years. 26 years. They wanted 26 years. Yeah, that's what they wanted.
So let me guess. They're trying to use the value or probably the insured value of these paintings and put that as the number of amount of what you stole from these people, which that's why they would give you that many years.
Yeah.
When, like you said, the actual value of these paintings is probably 80% less than the number that they gave you. And that's still maybe on the high mark.
It literally is.
Wow.
The thing was, it was too much. I told you about the $1 million, right? You know how they uncovered the $1 million? They used the subpoena. They illegally used the subpoena. I believe they used the Nassau County subpoena to obtain bank records in Kings County or vice versa. It was one or the other. And that's a Class D felony because you can't use the subpoena for whatever you want to. It's got to be for whatever specifies on the subpoena.
Right.
So once they did that, the judge was a little upset. You know, I was ready to go to court. Let me tell you something. I was ready to go to court because I was one way or another. I was going to confess that, you know, these guys are fucking schmuck. You know, I was set up here. I'm some poor fucking schmuck. And this fucking guy set me up for some insurance scam.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a painter. What the fuck do I know? These are just pretty pictures. Can I have one?
Or three.
Or six.
Okay, so that's what they're throwing the charges at you originally. What is Cutler doing here?
Cutler's throwing everything at them. He's throwing every motion in the book at them. I mean, we have motions that are in the law library right now under my name and his name. I mean, it goes on and on. He threw every motion from fruit from the poisonous tree, which was setting me up, to it was just motion after, just like the reality show. They filmed the reality show, and that was something else because you're contaminating the jury pool.
Yeah,
everybody's able to watch this now.
Yeah.
But it's different. You know, it's different. Like, you know, I tell everybody, you know, they could do whatever they want. They could break whatever laws they want. Once they got you in the cuffs, they're going to make every effort to prove that you're guilty. If you're not guilty, who gives a shit? They got the cuffs on you. You're guilty.
Yeah. There was a big trial that just ended down here where I live at in South Carolina. I don't know if you heard about it, but it was the Murdaugh trial. It's about the lawyer.
Yeah.
So this guy, he was already in jail for all the money fraud shit. Well, then he's getting brought up on the charges of murder for his wife and son. Well, before this jury happens, there's a 2020 out on him. There's a Netflix documentary out on him. And I think it was a Hulu documentary or HBO Max, one or the other HBO Max documentaries. You got three fucking documentaries painting this guy as the biggest asshole. And he was, I'm not saying he wasn't, but painting this guy horribly. I don't get how that's not like something against that, that you can release those things before this trial happens. Like, I just don't understand that. Kind of the same thing in your case. They're releasing these TV shows way before the trial. So anybody that goes in there that's seen these TV shows is not really going to pay attention to a fucking thing of what that jury says. They already had it made up in their mind what they thought, how this played out before they go in there. Same thing with Alex Murdaugh. I think anybody that watched those documentaries coming away thinking, even if he didn't kill his wife and kid, he was still an asshole. He's still done a lot of bad, fucked up shit. So I think they went in there thinking, he's not getting out of jail anyway. Fuck him. We're going to find him guilty for this, whether he did it or not.
Absolutely. Once you already taint someone as a bad person, they're tainted. You're not going to change anybody's perspective of anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did this all play out in court? What was the final say?
Okay, so we went back and forth, and finally on the day we're ready to go to court to start the trial, because I was ready to go to trial. I already had my story ready. I was ready to go to trial. I was set up on this, okay? The guy was going to commit an insurance scam, and I was the unknowing party, all right? So that wasn't going to be very difficult for me to explain to the jury, because I'm just, like I said, I'm just a painter. Yeah. What the fuck do I know? That's not very complicated, you know? And when you have to convince somebody of that compared to someone committing insurance fraud, selling paintings for 50, or they're worth 50 with insurance, but 3,500 without, you know, that's not very difficult to have to explain to somebody. Right. So while I was in there, I was doing my work. I was going to law library. I was practicing my own case inside my head. And I was also practicing it on other inmates, you know, running the case by them, because they only knew me by Picasso. You know, so they're not going to testify against me. What they're going to do, go tell the jury, yeah, Picasso? Yeah, fucking out of here, you idiot. Who the... You know, it's just... And the thing was, you know, I let it go. There's nothing you could do. You know, I wrote that ticket. I was in jail because I put myself there.
Right. So what was, on the day you were supposed to go to court, what, did they come back with some sort of plea, or what happened?
The minute the lawyer went in, we were ready to go. And the judge says, if you plead guilty right now, I do not want to take this case to court, he said. I mean to trial, he said. If you plead guilty now, I will release you today. So my judge said, because it was between two counties now, I had $1.5 million bail. I had Nassau County for $500,000 and Kings County for $1 million. So my lawyer said, look, if you drop both cases, then we'll plead guilty to both of them and he gets out today. They didn't let me out till Monday, but I pleaded guilty to both cases, done things I didn't even do. I pled guilty to it all, so they let me out. And I did. I got out.
Wow. So no, that's it. After that, case dismissed?
Yeah, that was it. No parole, no restitution, none of that.
Holy shit.
And there's still two paintings missing.
And that's the two that you didn't know where they were when they showed you all those pictures.
Absolutely not. But they don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, It's like they don't want to hear. All they want to hear you say is yes. That's it. Yes.
Well, did Bruce take you out for a nice steak dinner or something after that? Because that had to be. That's a fucking win, brother. Looking 26 years in the face and just pleading guilty. I mean, obviously you got to take a felony, but who gives a fuck? You take that felony, awesome. You get out of that, and you just walk right out of jail. No parole. No nothing.
I think it's 20 felonies.
20?
I think it's 20, something like that.
God,
yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, all they did was lay them up like a cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't want to understand it.
Well, part of that, I don't know. Like, part of me says getting Cutler is a great idea because he is a great lawyer. And then another part of it is like, all right, anybody that comes in there who's getting represented by Cutler, they're really going to want to nail to the fucking wall because they don't like him.
You just said the catch 22. And that's exactly what I felt the whole time.
Yeah.
I felt like I knew he was in charge, but I knew that I was being made to pay because he was in the newspapers every day.
Yeah.
Every newspaper, he was right there saying that the DA was committing felonies and so on. It was just, oh my God.
Causing all kind of ruckus down there.
It was like he was picking the fight and I was getting the punches in the face.
Yeah. Well, that's it, man. When you get those high profile lawyers like him, and I've actually had Oscar Goodman on the show who represented a lot of mob people. He represented the guy that supposedly hired Woody Harrelson's father to kill a federal judge. He later went on and was the mayor of Las Vegas for like three terms, which is the most you can do out there. I mean, he was respected as a lawyer, but he was not liked, especially by judges and prosecutors alike, you know? So that's the risk you take when you get some of those high profile guys, you know, you got to wonder if you're going to be the whipping boy for what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, it definitely worked out well for you. So, I mean, I know you had to come out of that feeling, fucking like $1 million.
After I came out, I lost everything. I lost everything. I was like, dude, they took my Mercedes. My ex-wife took my Mercedes. I was homeless when I came out, literally. Like I was living with my mom. So I was like, I was done. So it was like, I came out and I'm supposed to be happy, but the world caved in on me and I was screwed. Even my little girl. I mean, the whole purpose of me getting out and being on the straight and narrow was my daughter. And she was taken already. They walked away with that.
Wow. So what was kind of your next move? I mean, what was the next thing you was like, look, obviously you got to put one foot in front of the other and start over and rebuild. And that is the only bright side you can put onto that is you're not in jail to where you can't start trying to put something back together again. What was your, you know, next move there?
I had to stop feeling pity for myself.
Yeah.
Because for maybe a week or so, I was trying to blame myself for everything that was going on. And if I was going to continue that, I was never going to get out of that hole.
Right.
You know, I pushed myself to get out of it and started with the job. And got my car back, got everything that I lost before, picked it all right back, and I dusted my shoulders off, and I made myself what I had to do.
Well, there's one thing, I'm actually a welder by trade. There's one thing that I like to tell, like, my son and his friends, I'm like, if you get a fucking trade that can't be replaced by a robot or some sort of machine, you will have job security, and it really doesn't matter how, if you have a record or whatever. I've worked with most of the people I've worked with in my life have had records. My dad hung sheetrock for a living. Every member of his crew had a record. I worked with him for years when I was first coming up. When I first got my first welding job, everybody, I felt odd because I didn't have a record. Everybody had fucking records, be it drugs or whatever, assaults, you name it. And then, you know, as the other businesses I've gotten into, it's like, it doesn't matter, but if you can pull off that trade, there's going to be a job for you somewhere. You're never going to have to, it's not like you're somewhere with computers and you're working in an office around these people where 1 million other people can do your fucking job. That's not the case when it comes to a trade, especially if you do it well. So something like welding or HVAC or painting, that's something that really is going to secure you, you know, always to be able to find employment. And I'm assuming, is that what you went back to, I'm assuming?
That's exactly what I went back to. That's what I enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I truly enjoy painting. Okay. It's not a profession for me. It's something I do because I love.
Right.
You know.
So how long down the pipe was it before somebody come knocking about wanting to try to turn this into a movie?
Nobody ever came knocking. That's what, you know, I love that about you right now. Cause you know, you went in a distance, in an area that nobody touched me on. Dude, nobody came knocking. In fantasy, people come knocking. Nobody came knocking. You know, I reached out to a couple of people and they were like, you know, it sounds like a great story, but the money's not there.
Right.
So the money had to come from somewhere. And I funded it, and we got with Adrian Mazzone of Transmedia, which she is phenomenal. She hooked me up with Ana Cepedas and Carlos Cepedas, which they are award-winning producers, and they did the directing and executive producing for the film The Picasso of Thieves. And let me tell you, when you see this movie, oh my God. You want to be blown away, like literally Scarface, but it's a documentary.
And you just had a screening of it, right? This past weekend.
Yes, I did. And Miss Universes were there. Oh my God. Tommy Harding was there from, he wrote the Hardening. There was, Matthew Cox was there. There must have been like six or seven different supermodels from Miss Universe were there. I mean, it went on. Cecilyn was there. She's a famous singer. Dude, it was like a gala event. It was amazing, dude.
Wow. Where'd they have it at?
Fort Lauderdale at the Savoy Theater.
Wow.
Savoy Theater, yeah. I think that's what it's called, Savoy okay. Theater.
I'm going down there in a couple of weeks. A friend of mine is having a movie premiere at the Hard Rock Theater.
That's where Rubens came from too. After we had the after party at the Hard Rock.
Yeah, they got the day or night club there.
We're right next to it. We're in the L Lounge.
Okay, so where the day or night club is, if you look on that outside, there's like a big fucking TV screen out on the side. But that's where they're showing that movie at that premiere they're having. It's like the 28th of this month now. Yeah, this month.
Man, what's the name of the movie?
It's called The Mob King. It's a guy that I'm friends with named Ciro DiPaggio. He had this vision of this movie he wanted to put together while he was actually incarcerated. And he got out, he funded up some money, he shot a pilot, he cut the pilot into like 10-minute single episodes. And then, you know, it went through a lot of stages of development, but it got pitched. It was almost turned into a series. Some things happened. It got swapped, turned into a movie. And I mean, he's had some top-notch actors in it, like Bruce Socia, James Russo, Robert Lasarda, you know, a number of people involved with it. And it got put into a film festival last October. I think it was the AMC Film Festival, if I'm not mistaken, out in California. It got picked up by a huge distribution company. And I think it's the 25th, I'm sorry, that it's actually being like everywhere. You'll be able to get it everywhere. Apple, Tubi. I mean, this is all platforms it's going to be dropping on. And they're having it's a 1 day or 2 days prior to when it drops, they're having the red carpet early watch premiere at the Hard Rock, the 24th of this month.
That sounds like a party you can't miss.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, I'm going. Yeah. I told him, he was like, I don't know if you have any interest, and he didn't even get it out. And I'm like, I got interest. I'll be there. I've got a lot of interest.
Oh my God. Dude, yeah, so sounds like a good time right there.
A lot of the cast are going to come down, so it should be a good time. So, I mean, I didn't know about this before. I might've would have tried to make it down there for this one. Cause that sounded like a premiere I would not have wanted to miss.
You know, and it wasn't, forget about it was a carnival like atmosphere. I mean, literally it was amazing, but the movie, I've been watching movies since I was 8 or 9 years old. My mother, my whole life, every weekend, you know, whenever she could afford it. And then when I started working, I would go to the movies on my own. This movie was phenomenal. It grabs you the whole time you're there, and you don't want to look away because it's throwing you in all different directions. But it's making you feel the way Scarface made you feel, you know, when they're cutting that guy up in the shower.
Yeah.
It makes you feel that way. There's something dark about it, which I love. I love because that's the way he sees it. I had no, this is not a fluff film. This is not, oh, he's the best in the world. This is not, this is what, I want to know what you think about me. And if it hurts, it hurts. You know what I'm saying? And this, dude, this movie's real.
When can we expect this thing to be dropping?
I'm hoping within the next couple of weeks, I'm hoping to hear what streaming platform it's going to be going on.
Well, definitely let me know what platform that's going to be on. I'll take a look at it for sure.
No, I think you're going to be blown away, man. I really do. I mean, I hope you are. You know, everything I told in this documentary is the truth. You know, you don't do something like this without really opening up and saying, you know, this is what it is, you know?
Yeah. And bearing your soul to it for sure.
Exactly.
So, I mean, what's next? What have you got on the horizon? I mean, obviously this is coming out. What is next for Picasso? What's on your list?
Well, this is the thing. This is a whole evolution thing now. Movie comes out. Right now, I'm a painter. As soon as the movie comes out, if it's a hit, I'm going to be fired. So that movie has to be a hit enough that it sustains me. So we're looking at a book deal. We're looking at a reality show, possible big screen movie. And wow. They even said a comedy, too, which I thought would be phenomenal. Because a comedy, I got some ideas for that. Forget about it.
Oh, I've seen a lot of robbery stories turn into comedies. Matter of fact, the guy that me and Matt Cox have both interviewed, David Gant, robbed a Loomis Fargo, like the vault, like not a bank, but he was over the actual vault, like where they stored the money that would go from there to the banks. And it was like $18 million. And then he fled to Mexico. Some people that he was working with kept most of the money here. They wound up not giving him his part. They tried to fucking hire a hitman to go kill him. And that was turned into a movie called Masterminds. And it had Zach Galifianakis playing him, who, if you've ever seen like any of the Hangover movies, he's the funny guy with the beard. Very, very funny dude. And it was
Zach Galifianakis. Yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah, if you've seen all the Hangover movies, he's the funny guy in the Hangover, the one with the beard in the Hangover. I mean, he's hilarious.
He's in Dude 8.
Yes, yes. Yeah, Dude 8. And he plays the guy that actually robbed it. And I mean, he done a fantastic job, and it was funny. So like that movie could have played off a couple different ways. It could have went serious, but they done it the comedy way, and it was fantastic. So there's definitely a lot of different ways you can go with this for sure. So I hope it gets picked up, man. I hope you get the book deal. I hope they pick something up with maybe a reality show, and then, you know, a big screen premiere too. And I should expect an invite for that too, if that happens, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. But let me tell you from the heart, I've been a criminal my whole life. You know, since I was a kid, this is all I know, you know, but, when my girls came into my life, that's the only thing that would have changed me, take me out of where I'm at, you know? You just don't one day say, yeah. I mean, I know people love to hear it, but it's bullshit. When people say, yeah, I'm not that person anymore, and they say just to say it, come on. I'm telling you, that's not who I was. I'm that way now because of my girls. You know, I can't imagine being one second away from them. But it's not easy to change your whole life. This is not a overnight thing, you know.
Absolutely. Are you on any types of social medias?
I am on Facebook. I'm Picasso Vega on Facebook. I'm also Picasso Born in Brooklyn. That's our main page for the movie.
Okay.
And also on YouTube, it's the Picasso of Thieves. The Picasso of Thieves. And on LinkedIn too, Picasso Vega or Picasso Born in Brooklyn or the Picasso of Thieves. Anywhere you Google me, we're out there. We're everywhere.
We'll put some of those direct links in the show notes in the bottom of this episode on YouTube. Obviously, if anybody's listening on audio, if you want to track him down, you can go to the search engines that he just mentioned and track him down there. Man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show and telling your story. It's a hell of a story. And my friend, we wish you nothing but the best going forward and much success.
I want you to look at the movie, watch it, and then tell me, have me back on the show. You can tell me the truth, what you feel.
Yes, absolutely. Now,
I value the truth.
Yeah.
If you still think it sucks, I want you to tell me it sucks.
Well, I can tell you, if it's anything related to Scarface, like you mentioned, then I'm probably going to be a fan, but I will hold off until I see it, and I will have you back on, and I'll give you my honest opinion for sure. 100%.
I appreciate it, brother. You have no idea how much I appreciate being on your show.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure having you. I'm glad you were able to stop by. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Hollywood Wade. That was the Picasso of Thieves. And unfortunately, we are out of time. So tune in next week for an all new episode of Crime and Entertainment. Picasso, we'll see you, my friend.
Thanks, brother. Much love, bro. Peace.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. What an episode that was. I tell you, you know, you don't realize the amount of opportunity you give people day in and day out when you bring people into your homes to paint or run cable or, you know, clean or all sorts of things like that. Anybody doing any sort of remodel or bathroom work, you know, when you stop and think about it, you really do give these people, you know, access to your home. And in Picasso's case, you know, he said that the paintings were just calling him, and these people just had, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of paintings just stacked up in corners, just sitting there collecting dust. So, you know, he made the decision to do what he did. He paid his price. He, you know, done it the right way, done his time, paid his lawyer, and, you know, now he's trying to turn it into something positive. So we wish Picasso nothing but the best going forward. You know, I think he's got a future in whatever he decides to do here, but I think he's got a future in doing something with media. I imagine you might see a book about this at some point, maybe even a full-fledged movie. But go check out The Picasso of Thieves. We'll give you a link to that in the description here on the YouTube side of things. We hope everybody's enjoying everything else that we're doing. We've got great interviews lined up, really fantastic stuff coming down the pipe. Last week, we threw another Behind the Gangster at you with John Gotti. We've got about three more of those already in the can. They were recorded a few weeks back when I was in New York. So more of those coming down. Like I said, next week, we're going Ignacio Esteban comes back to the show. Probably our most returning guest, I think. Ignacio has been on here like four or five times. So great, great guest. I mean, always very knowledgeable, really brings us a lot to the table. We talk a lot about, you know, Timothy McVeigh from the Oklahoma City bombing, a little bit about Jim Jones, you know, really dive into cults a little bit. And I'll probably do another episode with him and do a deep, deep dive into Timothy McVeigh. But this is just kind of an overview, you know, how kind of like we normally do with the bikers. But we hope everybody's enjoying it. If you're enjoying it, please do us a favor. Run on over to the YouTube's Crime and Entertainment. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell, folks. That way you get notified every time we drop a video. And on the audios, please like, subscribe, rate, leave a comment. That really helps drive us up the charts, puts us in there in, you know, the top categories. Whenever you click on true crime, you see a bunch of stuff that's suggested for you. That's how people get there. People get comments and reviews, and it bumps them up to the top and really just helps drive traffic to that particular show. So we certainly appreciate you doing that. And also, social media's best, easiest, freest way you can help out the show. Share the show to your social medias. Look, not for nothing, I see you guys sharing a lot of dumb shit. Share this show. We certainly appreciate it. It might bring us some new listeners, okay? I see enough of these fucking LeBron memes out, you know, and I'm not even going to get into that, but he's not the GOAT, people, okay? That's Michael Jordan. That's to bed. And you're sharing all these LeBron stats and quotes. Share Crime and Entertainment, for God's sakes. At least that'll give you some enjoyment. We kick a lot of facts on this show, too, so we're not going to even get into the basketball stuff there. By the way, my money, I would like to see the Heat win, but after the dominating performance the Denver Nuggets put on Thursday night, I don't know, it looks a little bleak. It's Sunday night now. I think this is going to air Monday, so we'll see if Denver takes a 2-0 lead. But, you know, I'm ready for football, to be quite frankly with you. I'm not a huge basketball fan. I watch it when it gets down to the nitty-gritty like it is now, but I'm a football guy, and I'm ready for football. Better than the bookmaker will be starting back up then. Probably get Anthony Arialata back on the line for that. I know a lot of people enjoyed those last year. Hopefully he made some money. Well, that'll do it for this episode, folks. Picasso of Thieves. Hope you enjoy it. Go leave us a comment in the YouTube. Share it. Leave some good reviews on the audio platforms, folks. And we appreciate it. Again, Crime, the letter N, and Entertainment on Instagram. Crime and Entertainment on Facebook. And that will do it. I'm Hollywood Wade. That was Picasso Vega. And we are out of time here on Crime and Entertainment.